I just wanted to welcome everybody to our special swine flu defence conference call. My name is Jacqueline Merkins and I am the Senior Events and Marketing Coordinator of Organic and Natural Enterprise Group, also known as One Group. And I just wanted to officially welcome everybody to the call and, of course, to introduce Sorrel, our probiotics expert and who has also created the superfood Enliven. He actually has over 25 years of research and development in probiotics and microcosmetic world of bacteria, so he's definitely somebody we need to listen to at the moment. So I'd just like to welcome everybody to the call. Again, you'll be learning about, you know, defences to build up your own body's immune systems and, of course, to fight against flu pandemics at the moment. All through using natural and certified organic probiotics. Following the end of the call, we will be muted out the call just now, but we will reopen up the lines for some question and answers at the end of the call. So I'd just like to welcome everybody again, and of course, welcome Sorrel. Thank you.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. All right, we had this call about 10 days ago when this. Swine flu started hitting the news, and when I started the call last time, I said, well, this is kind of like a big puzzle, and we're all trying to put together the pieces to see what the real picture is. And, of course, for the last 10 days, I've been trying to even put more pieces of the puzzle together, and after our last call, there were so many people that wanted more information and wanted an update to what I've discovered in the last 10 days, or just wanted to hear the same information over for people that missed it. So here's where we're at. I've upgraded it from a puzzle to the greatest movie mystery that I've ever witnessed. That's complete with villains, twists and turns. Sometimes it keeps you on the edge of your seat, and sometimes you relax, and then you go back to the edge of your seat, and no one knows what the ending is going to be, or we don't even know who all the players are. So personally, I only see movies that I feel are going to have a happy ending, but from what I'm discovering, I'm not so sure that this movie is going to have a happy ending. So regardless of where this movie is going, I'm going to show you how to write your own ending, which will be a happy ending for yourself, and how to build your natural immunity to this and all viruses. So first of all, what we're going to do is just going to recap and look at what's happening and throw in some of the updated information. And then at the end, we're going to make a list of what you can do in order to write your own ending to this movie. So it's really important, I feel, that you have paper and pencil, because there's going to be some things that you're going to want to take notes on and have for future reference. And what we have to understand with what's going on is, see, most people look at things the way they want it to be and not the way it really is. So, for example, you know, I've talked to some of my neighbors and stuff around here. And, of course, one neighbor in particular, he wants to go on this vacation trip. And so he doesn't want to hear anything because he doesn't want to have to cancel it. So that's what I mean. A lot of people look at things the way they want it to be and not the way it really is. So what we're trying to do is try to get a view of this thing really is and not the way we want it to be. So since our last talk, we were at a level 4 warning, and of course now the World Health Organization Director General Dr. Margaret Chan has raised the pandemic threat awareness level to level 5, which basically means the world is at imminent risk from a pandemic from the H1N1 swine flu. Now, they have changed the name. When this first started 10 days ago, they call it the swine flu. They've changed the name to A-H1N1. I want you to write that down, A-H1N1 influenza. So they've changed the name because they were having problems with people going out and slaughtering all of swines or pigs, and they were getting complaints. So the other term I want you to write down so you have the understanding today is the term H1N1. So you've got two terms written in front of you, H1N1 and A/H1N1, and put in parentheses swine flu so we know how to identify the two. Now, basically, the H and the N stand for geographical locations. H stands for North America, and N stands for the Eurasia gene. Now, the H1N1 is the normal human flu that makes its rounds every year, and the AH1N1 is the renamed swine flu that's making the news right now. Now, it's interesting, in this research I've been doing for the last 10 days, trying to keep up the speed with what's happening, if you go on the Internet, you'll find some doctors who say this is a weaponized virus that will kill millions, it's the Armageddon virus. Then you find doctors who say it's a hoax and that there's nothing to worry about. So, I mean, talk about two radical ends of the spectrum. Well, it's out there all over the place. And as many of you have been on my calls for over the years, I've spent 30 years navigating the minefield called the nutritional health. And I got to tell you, this is a huge minefield in itself. And basically, the way I navigate these fields is I try to look for the statistics. I try to look for the scientific facts that back it up. I try to look for the science that it's founded upon. And even with all of this effort, at the end of the day, you know, no matter what we take back as our understanding, this is all conceptual, because until we experience anything, we really don't have true knowledge. Now, one advantage I have when I look at all this information is I have a pretty broad perspective, because I have the scientific understanding, and I've also got my own understanding of alternative understandings, for lack of better words. So what all of us have to realize is the way we process information is through association in our brains of learned information we have. So when anything comes into us, we try to associate with all of our known information, and then we make a decision if it's true or not true. And, of course, I have a pretty broad spectrum of information stored in my brain, so it gives me a little bit of a broader viewpoint than a lot of people. So I've got a pretty good grasp on what's happening, but I got to tell you, at the end of the day, it makes no difference what's really, truly happening, because the solution is going to be the same. So I don't know if we'll ever truly know the real truth of what's happening out there, but what each individual is trying to do is we're trying to decide how to respond to this. Is this a real threat that we need to be really paying attention to? Is this something that we can sit back and watch and make a decision later? So we have to, you know, that's where we're all sitting at. So the question is this swine flu overreported or underreported? And the biggest problem you have in weeding this out is everybody's got some sort of interest at stake. In other words, if this thing was really contagious and they were telling it the truth to it, you know, airplanes wouldn't be flying. So, you know, they're always couching things in whatever is the politically correct way to do. However, as we've been seeing for the last couple of weeks, the front page headlines, the cable news, the updates, and the top story status on the evening news is all about this outbreak that we're having, that it's the sheer volume of the media attention suggests it's a full-blown crisis. And this is what's interesting, is that according to the World Health Organization, common seasonal flu, which goes around every year, kills 250,000 to 500,000 people every year worldwide, and 3 to 5 million people worldwide are hospitalized for just the common flu, which is what we said earlier, the H1N1 virus. Yet, we don't ever hear too much about that, and in this case, we're hearing this huge mass media hysteria that's going on. Now, the beginning of this week in the United States, the Department of Homeland Security has sent out an alert to all the healthcare providers outlining how the BFT, the FBI, and the U.S. Marshals will be called upon to impose mandatory quarantines in the event of widespread swine flu outbreaks in the U.S. The other day, the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, came on and said he wouldn't get on an airplane because if someone sneezes, the whole plane gets flu. And, of course, they tried to spin that later on because, of course, the airlines went nuts when he said that. But it makes you wonder, what briefings did these guys read that we're not seeing, that they're even making statements like that? I mean, for the Vice President of the United States to say something like that he's not a stupid man, he wouldn't be the vice president. He's got to know how his words affect things. I mean, I know just when I'm speaking, I know how my words affect things. So being a vice president of the United States, you don't accidentally say you shouldn't be flying. So maybe he knows something we don't know. So what we're going to have to be careful in this whole thing is to make sure that we don't come complacent in the actions we're taking and how we're treating this thing, because if there's a potential that this could be a false alarm, or the other potential is this is what's called the first wave, and we'll discuss that a little bit later as we move down in our talk today. So what we do know is we've been warned for years that the flu pandemic was not an if but when. So what we don't know now is this another warning, or maybe it's the real thing. This is what each person is going to need to decide in the next several months. But regardless of what's happening, the steps that we're going to take and talk about today need to be taken regardless. So if nothing else, I'm looking at this whole thing as a wake-up call, because no longer are we individuals. We are a global family. And we're sitting here, I'm in New Zealand, some people in Australia, some are in the United States during this call. We're all over the world, so we're a global family, and all of a sudden we have a global threat that's threatening us as a global family, and it's time for all of us to put aside all of our differences and come together as a global family and make some decisions and take responsibility for our lives and what's going on. So ultimately, each one of us has to take responsibility for our action or non-action in this situation. And for those of you who have been on my calls for the last several years, you'll know one of my main messages is that we have to become our own authority and not surrender our authority to any government or person with an initial behind or in front of their name. In other words, we've got to determine individually, is this a real threat or just hype? Now, my personal response is going to be in degrees. And my degrees are from the observation mode to what I call full lockdown, where I don't leave my house. And I'm kind of right in the middle between observation and full lockdown. There's certain things I won't do right now. I won't go to restaurants. I won't go to movie theaters. I won't, you know, fly in an airplane. I won't get into big public situations. I mean, the other day, I took my wife in. We have a small village not too far away, and I started thinking, Mother's Day is coming up. I'll take her to an early Mother's Day lunch. And we walked into the restaurant, and my wife's very sensitive, and so she had something, felt something was off, so she went back to the cook and says, "How are you feeling?" And he starts sniffling and says, "Oh, pretty good." She says, "Do you have a cold?" And he says, "Yeah." And so we walked out of the restaurant and said, "We've got to be nuts to even be thinking of going in restaurants anymore." So the thing that we're all being careful of is we don't want to cry wolf, and we're in a situation where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you do not. So the best thing all of us can do now is to simply get prepared. And now if this thing doesn't turn out to be the global pandemic that they're predicting, then what we're doing in preparation will just put us one step ahead of everyone else in case there is a major health crisis that finally does hit. Now, after spending the last several days reading everything I could find about what's happening, in fact, I'm starting to lose my voice even because I've had calls from all over the world. About an hour ago, I was on an hour-long phone call. We've been discussing all this, trying to sort through the information. And what you find is huge contradiction in media reports that are either disturbing, confusing, and contradictory. So I'm going to go over some of the things that we talked about in our last call, the maze of information, disinformation, and the pure BS that's out there, so that we can kind of grasp what we think we know and what we do know. So one of the things that's being pointed out to the media is that Mexico City was the starting point. Now, of course, Mexico says U.S. is the starting point. And the problem we have with this situation is nobody really knows where it started, because you have an incubation time of 8 to 10 days with this flu. And, in other words, it could have been incubating in the United States and somebody flew to Mexico City and brought it, or vice versa. So we really don't know what the starting point of this is. However, if we assume it's in Mexico City, what we have is 20 million people living there, and a lot of them living in poor sanitary situations. I was talking to a doctor the other day, and he reckons the amount of people infected in Mexico City is closer to 200,000 than 2,000. He says the reason we're not hearing about it is that the only thing that we hear about is the people that go sick and end up in the hospital. And if we understand Mexico City is like a large petri dish, because it's a volcano rim, basically, like a bowl. And it's so polluted there. There's so much smog in the air and so much toxins in the air that you can't really see the hand in front of your face most of the time when you're in Mexico City. So it sits in this volcanic bowl, and so everybody's very toxic, and this pollution compromises the immune system. You couple that with the poor sanitary conditions, and you have a perfect situation for this virus to run rampant through the population. So, again, this is why we're looking at it at that as a major starting point. Now, of course, in any potential pandemic, you would think they would isolate the source of the contaminant, because that's the various protocols for any viral infection that happens. However, it spreads so quickly, they never had a chance to do that, because something like 70,000 people a day fly in and out of Mexico City. The swine flu virus is now technically everywhere in the world, fly everywhere. Now, what we do know about the avian flu, or swine flu, I should say, is made up of the avian flu, the swine flu, both European and Asian, and the human flu. Now, they're saying this is a never-seen-before virus. And the latest claims from the health authorities is that basically pigs are acting as like a living storage and incubation chamber for a variety of viruses, including the viruses for other animals such as ducks and chickens, as well as from humans. So in this virus, what we do is we have the H1N1, which is the human virus, and we have the avian flu, and we have two different swine flus in it. And these viruses, basically when they got the pig, they're saying, managed to share their DNA, which is the basis of all life, with each other, to combine into a brand new, never seen before viral hybrid. And then these pigs release these viral hybrids back into the environment, and they infected people. So that explanation to a lot of people seems pretty far-fetched and improbable, and this is where they're getting the idea that this is a weaponized virus that's either been accidentally or purposely let loose. So that's what starts that kind of thinking. Now, I've read another scientist who says that these viruses have been in the pig population for over 20 years, but he doesn't see this as a weaponized virus. So there's another thing that I don't know if we'll ever know the truth of one way or another. So it's either a natural or it's a weaponized virus that's been let loose, but it is something that we as a species have not dealt with in this new combination. Now, interested in an article put out on the Associated Press from the Agriculture Department of Mexico, and this was a few days into the outbreak, they reported that its inspectors found no sign of swine flu among the pigs anywhere in Mexico. So that kind of contradicts the thought that this came from pigs, if that statement was true. As you see, as we're going along, we're finding a lot of contradictory information and confusing information. Then after that, the Indonesian health minister came out and said that this controversial virus could have been man-made. And then the next statistics they came out with is they it's 0.1% that it's natural. And then we're told that it's only transmuted from body-to-body contact and not airborne, and yet the Mexican military runs around handing out masks. The vice president is saying if somebody sneezes on the plane, everybody gets it. So we have to assume that this has airborne potential. Now, here's the real key, and here's where the real problem is, and this is why we've got to really pay attention to what's going on. And this is what's called the mutation effect, or what they call the recombining effect of these viruses. So These viruses are always changing to survive, and as they change, they become more lethal. This is what they call the bridging virus that recombines as it travels and becomes more lethal. So what we have now, we have the possibility that the Mexican swine flu virus, now remember I said H1N1, can combine with the avian flu, which is an H5N1 viruses when it reaches Southeast Asia. Now, if that happens, it becomes highly transmittable and highly pathogenic. So if that ever happened, that combination is what the scientists are saying would be the Armageddon virus. However, what's more probable is since the AH1N1 is almost identical to the H1N1, the A, which is the swine flu, and the human flu, which is the H1N1, they're almost identical. They can easily recombine. So the reason this flu is so dangerous is it's mild. And that's what we're seeing. As we look around, we're sitting there saying, well, why is everybody so shook up? I mean, you know, in the U.S. where we got a couple deaths, in Mexico, they've revised the death thing down. So why is everybody, this is no worse than a normal cold running around. So what happens is people go to work with sniffles, and they spread the human flu, which is H1N1, around and infects the body. And then the A, which is the swine flu, H1N1, enters the body, and the two get together, and they recombine, and they form a new virus, and that's where the real problem starts. Now, what we have in the southern hemisphere right now is we're now entering the flu season, where the USA is just leaving the flu season. So the odds are pretty good in the southern hemisphere we're going to see this recombining happen. And this is where the waves start coming in. So, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Now, on May 3rd, there was released by the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention that swine flu's potential to reconfigure its genetic material, I'm quoting, and become more deadly is a major concern. And this was said by Ann Shusha. Then in the UK, they're stating that the swine flu is the worst yet to come in the autumn, warns Alan Johnson of the UK. And Alan Johnson said the lesson of the past pandemics was initially mild, and the outbreaks that followed by something much more serious, and that's what we're calling the wave. So when they start looking at the 1918 flu virus that killed somewhere, they don't know, between 50 and 100 million people worldwide, this virus is acting the same way. It was very mild when it first started, then it recombined, got more serious, then recombined, got more serious, and it was like four waves, and the fourth wave was the deadly one. So right now, doctors are being warned to prepare for a second, much worse swine flu wave in Britain in the autumn, is what the health secretary has said. So these waves are what we have to be concerned with now. Now, in May 3rd, 2009, and this was interesting, I found this, there were pigs in Alberta, Canada, that were thought to be affected by a farm worker who returned from Mexico on April 12th and began working on the farm. And 2 days after he began working on the farm, officials noticed that the pigs had flu-like symptoms. And approximately 10% of the 2,200 pigs in the farm had been infected. And so what now we're seeing is we have an efficient transmission from swine to human and from human to swine. And so this is creating further concerns now that humans can lead to this fall pandemic similar to the 1918, because we're having a species jump that's basically saying that the virus can adapt to a new host, and additional acquisitions over the summer, you know, continue to be this cause for concern. So now we have the fact that the virus exists in pigs, in animals, birds, and humans, and it can swap genes and recombine. So this is where the scare is in everybody's mind right now that I can sort out, is they don't know if we're just seeing the first stages, the first wave, and it's recombining, and the second and third waves are going to be coming, especially when the flu season hits. and that the avian flu, which is the H5N1 virus, is currently all over the world, and if it ever recombines with that, then we get some real serious problems. And so this is where the real concern is. Now, the other thing that's concerned is this seems to be striking the 21 to 44-year-old age group. These are the young and healthy patients. And the problem there that I see that we have with our younger generation is they haven't built up any immunities in the body. Now, I was born in the 40s, and in my lifetime, you know, I've been through many flu seasons, and my body's built up immunities, and most of our older generations have been through these flu seasons. We built up immunities. But a lot of today's, you know, when we were young, we used to go out and build forts in the woods and eat dirt and all the things that kids do. But today's generation, they, you know, they sit around in front of computers and television, and they're not getting out and getting their immune system built up, and so they're more susceptible to this. And what happens is when these flu viruses get into these young kids that don't have strong or immunized immune systems through exposure to the various things over the years, the immune system attacks this virus with a frenzy, and they call it a cytokine storm, and the actual immune system itself is what attacks the cells and causes the young people to die. And so that's what we're seeing, what's happening with the young people. It basically overwhelms their nervous system, and they have breathing problems, and that's why they put these critical flu patients on assisted breathing machine. Okay, now here's some more conflicting information that we're getting out of Mexico, and I discussed this in our last call. This is an email that was sent out from a doctor, Antonio Chavez, and he's working in one of the hospitals that all these flu patients are coming into, and he says, I'm a specialty doctor in a respiratory disease, I'm quoting now, disease in intensive care at the Mexican National Institute of Health. There is a severe emergency over the swine flu here. More and more patients are being admitted to the intensive care unit. Despite the heroic efforts of all the staff, doctors, nurses, specialists, patients continue to inevitably die. The truth is that the antiviral treatments and vaccines are not expected to have any effect, even at high doses. It is a great fear among the staff. The infections risk is very high among the doctors and the staff itself. There is a sense of chaos in the other hospitals, and we do not know what to do. Staff are starting to leave, and many are opting to retire or apply for holidays. The truth is that mortality is even higher than what's being reported by the authorities, at least in the hospitals where I work. It is killing 3 to 4 patients a day. It has been going on for more than 3 weeks. It's a shame there is great fear here. Increasing younger patients aged 20 to 30 are dying before our helpless eyes, and there's great sadness among health professionals here. Now, that's kind of in contradiction of what we're hearing, that isn't so serious there. And then there's another doctor in Mexico City. He says, I'm going to quote him, I work as a resident doctor in one of the biggest hospitals in Mexico City, and sadly, the situation is far from under control. As a doctor, I realize that the media does not report the truth. Authorities distributed vaccines among all the medical personnel with no results because 2 of my partners who work in the hospital, their interns, were killed by the new virus in less than 6 days, even though they were vaccinated, as all of us were. The official number of deaths is 20. Nevertheless, the true number of victims is more than 200. I understand that we must avoid panic, but telling the truth, it might be better now to prevent and avoid more deaths. So, again, here's more conflicting information that we discussed before. The European Union now is warning its citizens not to travel in North America. Australia on May 1st issued a memo that Australians should be stockpiling enough supplies to last 2 weeks on the back of an increase in the swine flu alert level, according to federal government pandemic plan. We saw in California that Schwarzenegger declared a state of emergency. New York, they had hundreds of students sick in the school hit by this swine flu. We've had Cuba suspend flights to and from Mexico. They were the first country to impose travel bans. The World Health Organization, and this is an interesting statement they said, on the current outbreak of swine flu, I'm going to start that again. World Health Organization said on the current outbreak of swine flu could lead to only a mild pandemic, but warned the 1918 flu pandemic, which killed tens of millions of people, started that way. Okay? So they're saying it could be mild, but also keep in mind that this is how that one started. So what we're seeing is the worst pandemic of the 20th century occurred in 1918, and it started off also relatively mild, like what we're seeing now, and then over three or four more waves, it got more and more serious. So now that we see that the World Health Organization has put us on phase five alert, that basically signals that the virus is becoming increasingly adept at spreading among humans. The next phase is phase six, which is the last one, which says it's a full-blown pandemic, and that's characterized by the outbreaks in at least two regions of the world. And talking to a couple of doctors earlier this week, they feel that we're already in phase six, and they just haven't announced it yet. China has gone on full alert to guard against swine flu. They do round-the-clock monitoring, and they quarantine everyone who comes in from Mexico. Hong Kong is the same thing. They said the virus there doesn't appear to be as lethal as bird flu, but it's too early to fully establish the extent of the threat. But they are saying it's very likely the beginning of a pandemic. In the UK, they're saying that the swine flu could affect up to 40% of the population. Professor Neil Ferguson, a member of the World Health Organization Task Force, has raised its alert over the virus when it went to 5 to say 4 in 10 people could be infected. Here in New Zealand, we're actually seeing people taken off of airplanes that are on their way to Australia or whatever, if they have a sniffle or a cough or whatever, thing, and they actually quarantine them in a hospital. And I think per capita, we have the most people quarantined in the world. I think the last count was over 400. So as you can see, it's a very interesting movie we're in the middle of. I'm just going to take a drink of water here. It's got all kinds of twists and turns and unknown dramas being played out. And we really just don't know where this is going, and we have to get prepared now. Here's the thing that everybody's going to have to be forced to look at. Do you take a vaccine or do you not take a vaccine? Because that'll be the next thing that they're going to be talking about, is vaccine. I don't think they'll be able to go to mandatory vaccines because I don't think they could produce enough to vaccinate the whole population of the planet. So first of all, let's understand what a vaccine is. A vaccine is a suspension of either live or killed microorganisms. And those microorganisms are made up of viruses, bacteria, and another type of bacteria that's a non-spore-forming bacteria. Or they're made up of proteins derived from them, and they're administered for the prevention or treatment of infectious diseases. That's the technical scientific definition of a vaccine. Now, the other thing they have is what they call antivirals. That's what Tamiflu is. And it's interesting, in the New York Times in January 8th of 2009 says that virtually all dominant strains of flu in the United all dominant strains of flu in the United States this season is resistant to the leading antiviral drug Tamiflu, and scientists and health officials are trying to figure out why. That just came out in January of 2009. Now, Dr. James Shannon of the National Institute of Health states, the only safe vaccine is a vaccine that is never used. Dr. Archie, I'll never pronounce this right, Kolar-Thienes, she's the medical superintendent at the Kolar-Nadbrai Hospital in Australia, called the swine flu immunization program a plan for mass murder. If a person is susceptible, I'm quoting now, if a person is susceptible, the vaccine may act as an immunological insult, predisposing the person to things like pneumonia or anemia. If an individual is incubating another flu virus, it can cause an immediate and severe attack of that disease. We don't know the long-term effects of this drug, swine flu vaccine, will be. It may predispose a person to cancer or other diseases. So I thought that was pretty heavy duty. And from the National Health Federation, we hear the risk of life and health from the high incidence of fever and other side effects of swine flu vaccine are substantial. Public health experts estimate that approximately 15% of those inoculated will suffer disabling illness. I mean, that's pretty heavy-duty odds, isn't it? Now, understand that vaccines decomposed proteins that have been taken from pustules of sick animals, that's the pus of sick animals, or putrefied eggs, they're mixed with deadly drugs such as carbolic acid, mercury, formaldehyde. Now, I want you to understand, mercury is the second most toxic substance on the planet next to radioactive fallout. So these decomposed proteins that make up these vaccines can cause botulism, salmonella, and other types of body poisoning. You know, it's no wonder why people drop dead after they get a shot. Now, Australian experts say that the existing vaccines are unlikely to be effective against an outbreak. We heard in that letter that Mexico doctors died 2 days after, I mean, two Mexican doctors died 6 days after inoculation. The Japan health minister has warned of the dangerous side effects of Tamiflu. They linked it to a lot of deaths in children. And interesting, I found this quote by Dr. Eleanor McBean, who lived through the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. And she said, as far as I could find out, the flu hit only the vaccinated. Those who refused the shots escaped the flu. There were 7 times more flu amongst vaccinated soldiers than unvaccinated civilians. And where I put a lot of this, too, is since mercury is so toxic, when it gets into the body, it lowers the immune system. And also what we've discovered is that the virus becomes more aggressive in a very toxic body. So the more toxins are in the body, the more aggressive the virus becomes. Also, vaccines supply genetic material, and the viruses which can use these genetic materials to recombine with and even come up with a different strain. So the bottom line is that all chemicals and drugs are inert foreign substances which act as irritants and toxins when we take them in our body. So they don't have the power to cure anything. What they're really trying to do when they put any of these chemicals and drugs into our body is they're trying to create a reaction in the body in order for the immune system to attack that drug and also take out the other things. But what it does is it basically taxes all your body reserves, it delays the healing, and it suppresses the immune system. And I found this is an interesting quote, and it was from Dr. Meyer Einstein, or Iselstein. It says, since the 12th century, the most commonly used treatment for cold or flu is chicken soup. Said Dr. Meyer Einstein, one of the guest speakers at the U.S. Autism and Asperger Association regional conference at the Crown Plaza. And he said, if you think we have anything more sophisticated now, think again. Now listen to this. What has impact, he said, is vitamin D and probiotics. I thought, wow, that was an interesting statement. So what we have to understand now is this microscopic world is highly intelligent, and its bottom line is survival. Now, humans think because they have all this high technology, they're the intelligence or rightful rulers of this planet. But I'll guarantee you, if the bacteria kingdom or the viral kingdom turns against us, it's all over. Man in no way can dominate nature or play around with nature thinking he or she is in control. Nothing is further from the truth. So what we have to do now is we have to write our new movie ending. And I just want to take a pause here in case anybody has some input or another thought they want to add to this movie that's being played out before we get to the good news and how we're going to write our new movie ending. So who's ever muted everybody out, if you could unmute in case somebody's got something they want to add. Okay, does anybody have anything they want to add to what we've done? That we've gone across. What we've been trying to do now is just highlight the movie we're in and how the ending could be scary, but we're going to write our own ending. It's going to be a happy ending and very positive. So I guess if there's nothing anybody wants to add to all of the information that I've been able to glean and add another piece into the puzzle, last call, otherwise we'll move on to the last part. All right, so now we're going to create our own movie ending. Now, the key in any conflict is not to participate. So what you can't do is you can't change a movie by yelling at the movie or throwing things at the screen. You have to get up and leave. So the way we get out of this movie that we're seeing on the worldwide screen is we have to understand that our own body is our best defense, and the immune system is the key. And so what we have to do, for those of you who've been on a lot of my calls, you know, we have to take a different view of the body. We can't look at it as a body. We have to understand that the body is made up of these 10 trillion cells and 100 trillion bacteria. So we don't have heart cells, lung cells, and all these different, we don't have hearts, lungs, livers. What we have is cells that make up our hearts, lungs, and livers. So we got heart cells, lung cells, liver cells. And that's what we have to be focusing on, and their health is what's imperative. So it's not that the virus that kills. It's rather the stress upon our immune system that causes death. So most people in 1918 either died of pneumonia or strep throat infection. They didn't die of the virus. Now, I want you to really pay attention to this one, because we have to understand what a virus is. And a virus is an ultra-microscopic, metabolically inert, infectious agent that has RNA, DNA at its core, and has a protein sheath, and this is the key. It can only replicate in a living host. In other words, this is a non-living entity that doesn't have the ability to reproduce itself. It has to get into a host, into a human body, in order to do this. Now, the H1N1 flu virus has been around for years. That's the common people-to-people virus we've looked at all around. And so what we have to understand is the way viruses get into the body and how they work. This is where we have to move into the cellular level. Now, when you get into any of your cells, you'll find they have what they call receptor sites or docking sites. So for all you Star Trek fans, just think about when the space shuttle or something docks with the mothership. If the mothership has to be able to receive the shuttle that's docking with it, and the shuttle has to have the right combination to dock with the receptors. So what happens is when this virus gets into the body, there are specific receptor sites on the cells that virus can dock with, and what it does is it comes in disguise, and it docks on these specific receptor sites with the cell. The cell thinks it's a good guy and invites the virus into the cell, and once the virus gets into the cell, what it does is it sheds its disguise, and it goes in and hijacks the computer of the cell. And what it does is it reprograms the computer of the cell to produce replicas of itself instead of healthy cells. And then once it produces enough replicas of itself, so it multiplies 100 times or 1,000 times, whatever it multiplies, then it actually bursts out of the cell and goes into the body looking for other cells to replicate that process. And, of course, as the cell is dying after these viruses burst through for it, and releases a chemical into the body called interferon, which is a chemical scent that alerts the immune system that the cell's been compromised and it's got an invader in the body, and then the immune system starts to do battle with this to defeat this. Now, this is why it's really important that we are not toxic. You know, with toxic vaccines or foods, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, because that immune system needs to be present, it needs to be fully functional to do battle with these viruses that get replicated, and it can't be sidetracked somewhere else. Now, again, I want to reemphasize this. Viruses are not living organisms. They cannot reproduce themselves. They require your cells to replicate. So, with this understanding, I'm so excited about this, because this is probably the most exciting thing I've confirmed within my own research. And we're getting into what's called peptides. It's the new frontier of science that's happening. Now, Candace Pert, she's the director of science labs, and she specializes in peptides, and more important, in what's called the neuropeptides. These are peptides that are made in the brains. Now, what I'm going to quote her. What she's saying that if the cell is the engine that drives all life, then the receptors are the buttons on the control panels of the engines, and a specific peptide is the finger that pushes the button and gets things started. So I'll reduce that to English. Is what we're saying here is that on these cells, you've got receptor sites that have to be activated in order for the cell to do its function, and peptides are what activate these receptor sites. So here's the key, and this is the exciting part. Viruses use the same receptors to enter a cell, and depending on how much of a natural peptide or a particular receptor site is around or available to bind them, then that virus that fits in that receptor site will either have an easier or hard time getting into the cell. So what it's saying is that on these receptor sites that the viruses use, if there's an abundance of peptides in those specific receptor sites, then the virus cannot get into the cell. But here's the cool part. The same virus that creates the symptoms of cold uses a receptor site for a chemical substance called a neuropeptide. That means this peptide is made in the brain. And guess what makes this peptide? It's the happy state of mind. So when you're happy, the cold virus cannot enter the cell because the receptor site is being blocked because those peptides, these neuropeptides, are on those receptor sites. So it stops and blocks the receptor sites so the viruses can't access them. So she goes on to say, because the molecules of emotion are involved in the process of viruses entering into the cell, it seems logical to assume the state of our emotions will affect whether or not we succumb to viral infection. And when I saw that, because I've been studying receptor sites and peptides for a long time, but when I saw that research, I went, holy moly, I can't believe this. It's so simple. This means the secret to this whole thing is the coherency of protecting ourselves is the happiness you feel in your heart. So, in other words, the very words that they're using in this movie, in this mass media of pandemic, crisis, bioweapons, economic crisis, quarantine, martial law, those are actually generating fear in us, and they open up the receptors so the virus can get in. So that's how we rewrite the ending to this movie. In other words, to generate our natural immunity, the first step we have to do is we have to generate feelings of well-being in order to create these flow of chemicals, these neuropeptides, to flow into our cells so it doesn't allow anything to enter into them. This is what's called natural immunity, and this is how we become or create a state of inaccessibility to these viruses. Now, tell me how cool that is or how exciting that is. Now, if you haven't had, all you got to do is tune in to the times you've been happy in your life. This is not happiness in the mind. It's happiness in your heart. So when you feel love in your heart for your loved ones or your animals or whatever it be, whenever you feel joy because you watch the birth of your child, whatever it is, those are the frequencies we have to generate to release these chemicals, these neuropeptides in our brain, so they adhere to these receptor sites, so the virus can't use those receptor sites to get into our cells. So that is the first thing we have to do. Now, the second thing we do, we know that the when we're toxic, the virus gets more aggressive. We're starting down our list of things to do now if you're taking notes. So the happiness was the first thing. The second thing is we have to boost the immune system because, and the first thing we do there is we detox the body. because we know that the toxins make the virus more aggressive, and if the immune system is busy fighting toxins in our body, then it's not doing its job of dealing with any viruses that may have got into the cells. So that's the key. Now, this is where Enliven really comes in and your fast track comes in, because if you start eating, now I put out a long time ago a 30-day detox diet that you can send off to one group, they'll send it to you, and what we're basically doing with that diet is we're eliminating all the toxic foods that we're taking in. We're going to pure living whole foods. We're taking our 3 teaspoons a day of Enliven over a 30-day period, and what we're doing is we're flushing all of the toxins out of our body. Also, we got to make sure that we build up the bacteria side of our body, because the probiotic side of our things, because we know that the body has 100 trillion bacteria in it. We want to make sure that balance is there, because they're the first line offense and defense of the immune system. So it's really important that we get that probiotic balance straight in our body, that we know that the health of our individual cells is totally predicated upon the nutrients we feed them. So we have to super saturate our bloodstream with all of these broad spectrum of nutrients we're finding in the Enliven and in the fast track, so that our immune system is in tip-top condition. We have to de-stress ourselves the best way we can. We meditate, be quiet or whatever, and we really got to tune up our body. So that's where your Enliven and your fast track come in. I highly recommend, if you haven't done it, you stock up, because we may see in the future, if this thing becomes pandemic, that, you know, who knows, airplanes don't fly and railroads don't run because people are sick. So, you know, I've laid in a good stock of product, because to me that's my lifeline in that sense, my insurance policy. Now, other things that you can do is make sure you start building up the vitamin C in your body through natural sources of vitamin C, foods high in vitamin C or natural ascorbic acids in that sense, vitamin C in food state, because one of the things that these viruses do is strips the body of vitamin C, and then your blood cells collapse, and this is where pneumonia and all these other programs happen. Another thing that you can look at is iodine. Now, iodine is the universal pathogenic killer. And so, like your seaweeds, kelp and nori are good sources of iodine. Magnesium is important, because when it's not present in the body, you'll get inflammation in the body. So the Enliven product is rich in magnesium, but eat magnesium-rich foods. If you do happen to get a fever, let it go. Don't try to suppress the fever, because that's the body's way of burning out viruses in the body. Another important thing is to make sure your body is alkaline, not acid. Most of our foods today are very acidic in nature, so we set up an acidic condition in the body, and the viruses thrive in an acidic condition. They have trouble in an alkaline body, and your Enliven product is very alkaline, so that will help alkalize the body. You can take baths in baking soda, and that will be absorbed through the skin, which will help alkalize. And in some cases, if you need to take a teaspoon of baking soda, you know, once or twice a week, that will help alkalize the body. The other important thing, which we mentioned earlier when that doctor said that probiotics and vitamin D were the important thing, well, get out in the sun whenever you've got sun and expose yourself, and get your vitamin D, because the body makes vitamin D when in contact with the sun. And that'll lower your risk of any respiratory tract infections. So optimize your vitamin D levels. Another thing is look at good soaps and keep your hands and your clean. And that's another thing that one group makes, is some beautiful soaps that aren't full of chemicals and things that we can stock up on and be washing our hands. A lot of people are wearing masks, but the silly part about it is if they walk around in an environment with a mask and they collect the viruses on the mask and then they take it into their home, they've defeated their purpose. So if you're going to wear a mask, then make sure you don't, you know, you have some sort of disposal outside of the home, you dump it in, and clean your hands right after you take your mask off. If you've got a sneeze, you sneeze into a Kleenex, throw the Kleenex directly into the garbage can and clean your hands. So it's important that you clean your hands. If we take to heart what Australia is saying, they're telling everybody stock up for 14 days worth of food. Well, let's get some good food, some nutritious food. Let's stock up on some rice and beans. Because I'll guarantee you, if this thing goes pandemic, all those stores are going to be empty. Another thing I use is colloidal silver. Colloidal silver, whenever I'm out in public, I spray up my nose, in my ears, and in my throat, because those are the three areas, basically, these viruses enter. And colloidal silver has been known to kill a viral. Now, I don't drink it. Some people do. But by spraying it in the ears, up the nose, and in the throat, any viruses that are incubating there will be terminated. Ear infections are very closely connected to the common cold and influenza viruses, because what they do, our ears make wax. So the viruses get in and incubate in the wax. So keep your ears clean, and you can do that with a hydrogen peroxide solution of, I think it's about 3%, to help keep your ears clean, cleaned out so things can't incubate. It's also important to drink pure water. This is reverse osmosis water, pure water, so we don't become dehydrated. It was interesting that more than 70% of preschool children never drink plain water. Unbelievable. And that was published by the Archives of Diseases in Childhood. Disease publication. Personally, I'm not going to restaurants anymore. Grocery stores is going to be another concern, because people are handling the produce and all of that. You may have to go to self-imposed quarantine. You know, these are things you're going to have to consider if this thing mitigates and goes in these waves that they're talking about. Make sure you get enough rest, because it becomes... it's important, because if you're tired and run down and overly fatigued, it'll be easier for your body to succumb to these things, and you'll be able to fight it better if you've got a good night's sleep and got good rest. All of us face some stress each day, and stress is it destroys our bacteria in our body. It suppresses the immune system. It just overwhelms the body. So we've got to somehow de-stress ourselves in our day-to-day thinking. Exercise is important. So when you exercise, you increase your circulation and the blood flow throughout your body. So that also helps to circulate the immune system and helps you a better chance of finding the illness as the immune system circulating. Another thing you can do is you can eat garlic regularly. Garlic is like a broad-spectrum antibiotic against bacteria, viruses in the body. And so, unlike antibiotics, no resistance can be built up by these bacteria and things when you're eating garlic. So that's another thing you can do. The one thing you want to do is avoid hospitals at all costs, and I say vaccine, because obviously if you go to a hospital, that's going to be the center of where all the infections and the problems are. And that you could get exposed to recombined bugs or whatever in those areas. And each person would have to make up their own mind about a vaccine, but personally I wouldn't go near one. So the bottom line is, you're the master of your body. You know, you control the ending of your movie. It's up to you if you want to be happier in fear. It's up to you if you start eating proper foods, living foods that have life force in their immune building. It's up to you if you're taking your enlivenment and taking your fast track and washing your hands and staying out of the restaurants, staying out of the high exposure places, not going to movie theaters. You know, it's up to you to take control of your life in this sense. And most importantly, if we really tuned into what I said about blocking these receptor sites, then what we have to do is we have to learn to love and appreciate ourselves and our body. We've got to reach around and hug them. We've got to tell them how much we love them and how much we appreciate us for, protecting us. And so this whole thing, it applies to what you put in your mouth and what you think and what you feel. So it's all of these combinations. And the responsibility is ultimately yours. And so that's really my update on what I have to share with you today. And I'll throw it open for questions if you want to unmute the phones. If anybody's got any comments or questions or anything we've said. and then we'll have a sign-off. Hello.
This is Melanie.
Hey, Lanny. Listen, did we get that whole call in? Because my phone was dead at the end of it.
Couldn't hear anybody for a few minutes.
Hello?
Hi, Sorrel, it's Jackie.
Hello.
I am on the call. I'm not quite sure what's happening with the, system. I think it's just because we've got quite a lot of people on there. If anyone does have any questions, if you could ask Sorrel now, and then we can try and wrap up. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask Cesaro about golden seal and echinacea. What do you think about that, taking that?
Yep, yep. I think it can't hurt.
Okay.
So you have to use our whole arsenal. I think that's, I think you should use everything in your arsenal. I think that's a good product.
Okay, so use that too. That's in addition to Enliven?
Yeah, I mean, if there's an economy of scales, Enliven's always at the top of your list. If you've got room for others, it doesn't hurt.
What about vitamins, let's say vitamin C in pill form?
Vitamin C, make sure it's a food form or natural. Make sure it's not any of the synthetic C's. Make sure it's food form or natural ascorbic acid.
What about ester C?
Again, it's got to be food form or natural. The problem is you have so many different ester C's and C's on the market, and a lot of them are synthetics, and you don't want anything synthetic to do no good.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, this is Venus. I want to add something.
Yeah, go ahead, Venus.
It's in relation with the colloidal silver that you mentioned. I want just to tell people that most of the time when you go and look for colloidal silver, you will find some that is in nanoparticles, nanotechnology, and this is actually something that you really don't want. Although most of the people who work in the stores will tell you that this is better because it's so small that it absorbs perfectly. This actually goes in the cells without their control. So you actually don't want to get nanotechnology colloidal silver. You want it to be high quality but not nanotechnology, and that's for everything else. You don't want nanoparticles and nanotechnology in your stuff.
I appreciate
so, Venus, hi, it's Melanie.
I think kind of a new development in the colloidal silver industry, so it was a good point. I appreciate you bringing that up. Okay, well, I love you, Amelia. Wish you all the best. See our next call later in this month. Hopefully we'll be back to normal.
Thank you.
Thanks for everybody being here today.